This is London. Le Show World Service. I'm Roger Pink at Le Show House. And now...
Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
It's just for the stations that want to class it up a little bit, you know, afraid that this show isn't classy enough for their fine airwaves. But I am in London, ladies and gentlemen, as you know. Again, well, you didn't know that. I could have come back. But how could I? It's St. Patrick's Day. Well, it was yesterday, but if you look out at Leicester Square today, it appears to have extended, and it may not end. A lot of people in green down there listening to loud music. What do you expect? Ladies and gentlemen, if the rest of us just got the slack that people in public life had or have, it would be cool. See what I'm saying? If the rest of us had the slack that people in public life have. For example, Exhibit A. Right here in the London Sunday Telegraph. Tessa Jowell is the culture minister of England. See, they have culture ministries here. That's either good news or bad news, depending on what you think. But the culture minister is in charge of, among other things, the Olympic Games, which are going to be in London in 2012, much to the relief of Paris. One reason I say that is because Tessa Jowell this week announced that the original budget estimate of £2 to £3.5 billion, just double that and you've got dollars, will now move to about £9 billion. So it's, you know, quadrupling, and we're a long way from 2012. But she explained this week the original budget estimate, she said, was merely a funding pitch. Those were her words. A funding pitch. Very Hollywood of her. So but you know, she gets the slack for that. Similarly, Philip Zelikow, who was until recently Condi Rice's counselor at the State Department, and before that was, did something else for a living, said part of the delay in getting the surge underway and seeing results from it over in Iraq stems from, quote, a recognition that things were worse than people realized, unquote. And by people, he means, quote, serious people, unquote, like people who are getting government checks, as opposed to us who realized how bad it was from day one, Phil. He adds, significant parts of the new strategy need to be developed from scratch, which is the compelling answer to those in government who from time to time say, well, you know, you don't get do-overs. Yes, apparently you do. Never too late, Department. The Pentagon reported to Congress this week on Iraq and described some of what's happening in Iraq as, oh, my God, a civil war. October through December of last year was the most violent three-month period since 2003. So that's good progress. The report also has some interesting statistics. Inflation in Iraq, 50% per year. Get your wheelbarrow handy. Baghdad residents are getting 6 hours of electricity a day. This is the Pentagon reporting some of that good news. 16% of Iraqis say their income meets their basic needs, according to the Pentagon's report, ladies and gentlemen. And 9,000 Iraqis are fleeing the country each month because things are so damn good there. Finally, in the spate of interesting statements by people on the public payroll, President Bush talking to congressional leaders about the impatience to see results from the surge, said they're part of, quote, a culture of seeking instant results, unquote. So don't tell me President Bush doesn't know anything about culture. As for the, you know, original budget estimates for the war, ladies and gentlemen, that was just a funding pitch. Hello, welcome to the show. We'll be right back.
by the time I'm gone. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, now. Yeah, yeah. Baby, don't you know there's a riot going on in my heart. Now, baby, in my heart. Just put yourself in my shoes. Let me know if the world looks the same to you. Whoa, yeah, now. Yeah, yeah. Baby, don't you know there's a riot going on in my heart. Well, in my heart.
From Leicester Square in London, England, where global warming's over, ladies and gentlemen. You know, last week was like sunny and summery. Springy, but with, you know, some summery underneath. Today it's cold and we had a hailstorm, for your listening pleasure. From all of that, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show and the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First, from the British television children's program, no kidding, Blue Peter.
Now, speaking of competitions, we've got some news about one that we ran back in November. Unfortunately, there was a technical problem getting callers through to the studio, and so a visitor was asked to stand in as the contestant. This was a mistake.
We'd like to say sorry to you, because when this mistake happened, we let you down.
No, it was a mistake. Blue Peter is sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Can Dick Willie be far behind? From the London Sunday Times, an article about Lord Lambton, called Lord Louche, Sex King of Chianti Shire, in January, falsely stated that his son Ned now Lord Durham, and daughter Catherine had a party at Lord Lambton's villa in 1997, which degenerated into such an orgy that Lord Lambton barred them from the villa, called Centinale, for years. In fact, Lord Durham does not have a sister called Catherine. That's the name of his former wife. There has not been any orgiastic party of any kind, and Lord Lambton did not ban him or Catherine from Centinale at all. We apologize sincerely to Lord Durham for the hurt and embarrassment caused. It's almost worthy of the L.A. dog trainer. Ladies and gentlemen, from Pakistan, a television station was instructed by the Media Regulatory Authority this week not to broadcast its evening news show, in which it was showing protests against the ousting of the Chief Justice of Pakistan, which we told you about last week. The station manager apologized to listeners. Apparently, the station still broadcast pictures of the protests. As a result, police stormed the offices of the TV station and tear-gassed employees. After that, President General Musharraf called the office of GOTV over the telephone and apologized for the attack. That's two apologies in one incident, ladies and gentlemen. A twofer from Pakistan. Hello, twofer. How are you?
Doing fine.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, in that statement that the Pentagon released this week from Guantanamo, apologizes for killing children in the September 11th attacks. Because war, for sure, there will be victims, he said. When I said I'm not happy that 3,000 been killed in America, I feel sorry even. I don't like to kill children and the kids. Unquote. Who says the educational system in Al-Qaeda is lacking. Well, it's English. It's not his native thing. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, for whom President Bush's nickname is Fredo. Get it? Alberto Gonzalez apologized to the nation's 93 U.S. attorneys in a conference call on Friday as he tried to hold on to his job. He apologized to the prosecutors not for the firings, but for their execution. No, they weren't executed for the execution of the firings, including for inaccurate public statements about poor job performance, according to people familiar with the afternoon conference call. It shouldn't have happened, Gonzalez said, according to one lawyer familiar with the conversation. The lawyer, who asked not to be identified because of the sensitive nature of the matter, said Gonzalez acknowledged that he'd seemed too detached during his news conference earlier this week, except for the part I watched, where at the end he said he stood by his earlier statements and then ran out of the room before he could stand by it any longer. I want you to feel like you could be open with me, he told the attorneys, and then gave his assurance that their independence was expected and they wouldn't be punished. The Pentagon's top general said Tuesday he should not have voiced his personal view that homosexuality is immoral and should have just stated his support for the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The written statement by Marine General Peter Pace did not, however, apologize for his stance on homosexuality. He likened homosexual acts to adultery in his earlier interview and said the military should not condone it by allowing gays to serve openly in the armed forces. Dateline Cedar Falls, Iowa, Republican presidential contender John McCain on Friday used the term tar baby, considered by some a racial epithet, and later said he regretted it. Answering questions at a town hall meeting, the Arizona senator was discussing federal involvement in custody cases when he said, for me to stand here and say I'm going to declare divorces invalid because of someone who feels they weren't treated fairly in court, we're getting into a tar baby of enormous proportions, and I don't know how you get out of that. Unquote. After the event, McCain told reporters, quote, I don't think I should have used that word, and I was wrong to do so. The term dates to the 19th century Uncle Remus stories, referring to a doll made of tar that traps Br'er Rabbit. It has become known as a way of describing a sticky mess, among other things. A senior Bombardier official, that's a Brazilian aircraft manufacturing company, has apologized to Japanese aviation officials after the war. Oh, sorry. It says it's a Canadian company. That's right. The other one is Brazilian. After one of the Canadian aircraft manufacturers' prop jets. No, they're not props. They're real jets, but with propellers. Made an emergency landing at a regional airport earlier this week when the nose gear failed to deploy. Speaking to reporters in Tokyo, Bombardier Vice President Todd Young, there's a good Canadian name, said it was too soon to comment on whether the fault for the gear's failure, the result of a missing bolt, could be traced to the factory, was due to poor maintenance by the Japanese airline. But he's apologizing anyway. The Marine that Staff Sergeant Frank Wooderich, who killed an attack, who who was part of an attack that in Haditha, Iraq, that killed women and children, is sorry, according to his interview on 60 Minutes, airing this weekend. But he said he would make the same decision that caused their deaths. He's charged with killing 18 civilians. This was following an attack that killed a Marine comrade. So he's sorry. There's nothing I can possibly say to make up or will make the deaths of the make well the deaths of those women and children. I'm absolutely sorry it happened that day. But he insists it was the right decision. What I did that day, the decision I made, I would make those decisions again today. That's combat for you. And actress Angelina Jolie has apologized for bringing the glare of publicity onto her newly adopted Vietnamese son. Who knew that would happen? Speaking in an interview with Ho Chi Minh City newspaper Pháp Luật, Jolie said, "I want to say sorry for bringing this into Pax's life." Three-year-old boy has been renamed Pax Thien, the Latin for peace and the Vietnamese word for heaven. The film star added she would stay at home to help the boy, who speaks no English, settle into his new life. Well, if she's taking him to his home in New Orleans, he'll fit right in. No, just sorry. Just so sorry. Me, so sorry. She vowed to pay regular visits to Vietnam. A curry that was boiled up with rat in the pot has been served to 18 people in a noodle stand in Tokyo, the operator of the stand said. The operator, Nippon Restaurant Enterprise, has apologized for the incident. We offer our apologies and will return the money to the customers who contact us. Nobody who ate at the stand has so far complained about any health problems, although some said the rat was undercooked. No. Baltimore police arrested a 7-year-old boy, handcuffed him, then hauled him off to the station house where his mother claims they took his mugshot and fingerprints, all for allegedly riding an off-road motorcycle on a sidewalk. "They scared me," Gerard Mungo Jr. told the Baltimore Examiner before breaking down in tears. "It is clear to me the arrest was wrong, that the officer on the scene should not have arrested the child, and on behalf of the city of Baltimore, I apologize to the boy and his parents," says Mayor Sheila Dixon, mayor of Baltimore. A Washington lawmaker, this would be Washington State, who erroneously called NASCAR driver Richard Petty a drunk driver, has apologized to the 7-time champion. Petty is helping NASCAR with its efforts to build a track in Washington State when was surprised when House Speaker Frank Chop began apologizing for referring to Petty as, quote, "that guy who got picked up for a DUI. I didn't know what he was apologizing for because I hadn't read the paper," Petty said. "When I walked out the door, I said, what's he apologizing for? Then they started going through all that, the different stuff he said. I said, I'm glad you didn't tell me what he really said because I might have went off on him." Petty has never been convicted of drunk driving. Petty Enterprises has never associated with beer or other alcohol-related sponsors. The team does not compete in the NASCAR Busch Series because of its opposition to alcohol. Dateline Salt Lake City, SkyWest Airlines apologized to a passenger who said he wasn't allowed to use the restroom during a 1-hour flight and ended up urinating in an air sickness bag after 2 really big beers. That's all we need to know about that. Another Japanese apology, because they are the world capital of sorry. Weather officials in Japan have apologized on TV for a computer glitch that led them to forecast the start of the cherry blossom season incorrectly. Red-faced officials have been forced to admit this year they got it badly wrong. The short period when the delicate pink flowers bloom is keenly awaited in Japan. Many towns and firms plan festivals and parties for cherry blossom season. The bows from the officials could not have been much deeper. Predicting when the cherry blossoms will bloom is one of the meteorological agency's most closely watched tasks, and this year they got it badly wrong. Finally, Milwaukee Bucks center Andrew Bogut apologized this week for getting caught up in the heat of the moment and making an obscene gesture toward the home crowd while leaving the court. He may face a disciplinary action from the NBA for the outburst, which came near the end of Milwaukee's loss to Toronto. Bogut was ejected after committing a flagrant foul against Toronto's Chris Bosh. Milwaukee television station showed video footage of Bogut making a gesture toward the grandstands as he left the court. He issued a statement apologizing to fans for his action early Tuesday afternoon. "They certainly didn't deserve my reaction coming off the court," Bogut said in his statement. "I got caught up in the heat of the moment." He also apologized to his teammates, coaches, organization, the league, and all of you who are listening right now. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Some news of the new Iraq. You know, the president and his supporters say we have to keep this thing going, because otherwise, if we leave, they'll follow us home. Our enemy. By the way, in an interview this morning on the British television, General Petraeus, not Betrayus, Petraeus, was asked by a British news correspondent, well, but no matter how long you stay, the people in armed insurgents in Iraq know the Americans aren't staying indefinitely, so they just wait till you leave, right? And General Petraeus said, well, but that might be some months. He said, well, but yes, but it's months. It's not years. Well, but, you know, months could extend. Anyway, the administration, when they're not saying that, say, well, if we don't stay there, they'll follow us home. According to the Washington Post, U.S. intelligence officials and outside experts believe the Iraq branch of al-Qaeda poses little danger to the security of the U.S. homeland. The likelihood of such an attack on the U.S. homeland would come from Iraq, many experts contend, has sharply diminished over the past year as al-Qaeda in Iraq has undergone dramatic changes. Once believed to include thousands of foreign fighters, it is now an overwhelmingly Iraqi organization whose aims are likely to remain focused on the struggle against the Shia majority in Iraq, according to U.S. intelligence officials. Don't these intelligence officials talk to the president? Al-Qaeda in Iraq's top leader is thought to be Egyptian. Most members are Iraqis, both in terms of leaders and foot soldiers, says one counterterrorism official. Iraqis make up 90% of the organization's several thousand fighters. When Zarqawi, the founder, was killed in June, a senior intelligence official said, a lot of us thought that was going to be a real milestone in our progress against the group. Instead, he said the new leader, al-Masri, has succeeded in establishing his own leadership, keeping the operational tempo up, and propelling sectarian violence to higher levels. In a year, al-Qaeda in Iraq went from being a major insurgent group from one of several to basically being the dominant force in the Sunni insurgency, says terrorism consultant Evan Coleman. He managed to convince a lot of large, influential Sunni groups to work together under its banner, groups I never would have imagined, he said. Al-Qaeda in Iraq's new membership and the allied insurgents care far more about what happens within Iraq than they do about bin Laden's plans for an Islamic empire, according to government and outside experts. That is likely to remain the case, whether the United States troops stay or leave. Asked by Senator Lindsey Graham whether al-Qaeda-type elements would follow U.S. forces as they withdraw from Iraq into Kuwait, Mike McConnell, the director of national intelligence, answered with one word, quote, unlikely, unquote. And what happens to those guys that we release from Guantanamo to their home countries? You know, those dangerous guys that we've kept detained for 5 years? So dangerous, you couldn't let them go? According to a new study, also from today's Washington Post, scores of Guantanamo detainees who've been quietly repatriated in the past 3 years, amid growing pressure from their home countries, have been released, walking down the street. Inmates have been systematically freed from custody within weeks of their return, specifically the ones who have been sent back to Saudi Arabia. Some of the repatriated Saudis were accused of lesser offenses, such as working for charitable organizations with alleged ties to al-Qaeda. Others were released in spite of standing accusations that they belonged to al-Qaeda or the Taliban or even fought against U.S. or coalition forces in Afghanistan, according to records. The case files also offer insight into the nature of U.S. evidence against these detainees. In half the cases studied, the detainees were turned over to U.S. forces by Pakistani police or troops in return for financial rewards. Many others were accused of terrorism connections, in part because their Arab nicknames matched those found in a computer database of al-Qaeda members. Pentagon officials declined to comment on the specific findings, say the U.S. government cannot control how other governments treat repatriated detainees, saying the decisions often reflect internal political elements or considerations. Says Navy Commander Jeffrey Gordon, a Pentagon spokesman, while some have called for the closure of Guantanamo, none have put both forth viable options for handling these dangerous men while preventing their return to terrorism. In December, a survey by the Associated Press found that 84% of released detainees were set free after being released to the custody of their home countries. Be afraid. be very afraid, I guess. You tell me, department. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. First, from broadcasting and cable, Court TV to ditch name, change programming, in rebrand. What? The Phil Spector trial is starting tomorrow. You can't do that. I'll read it for you. Court TV is changing its name, look, and logo as part of a network overhaul planned for later this year. Oh, thank God we'll get to see the Spector trial. The network, acquired by Time Warner last year, will no longer be called Court TV as of January 1 of next year, and will revamp its daytime trial coverage and add in primetime several new reality series, or as the network prefers to call them, real life series. The goal is to target a psychographic the network is calling, quote, real engagers, unquote, viewers who like watching shows about real people, especially action stories. Daytime programming will be redone and lead into a 3 to 5 p.m. block with talk shows hosted by Nancy Grace. Thank God there are not enough places on TV to see Nancy Grace and Star Jones. Trial coverage will move to, any guesses? The website. Get a computer! What's the problem with you? In development are quarterly specials from Court TV-owned website, thesmokinggum.com. The first is a countdown show called The Dumbest Criminals in the World. Court TV has rebranded itself several times before, most recently dividing its programming into trial coverage during the day and entertainment programming at night. Court TV is now overseen by Steve Coonan, who's head of Turner, became a branding whiz while at Coca-Cola. Yes, I said he was a whiz at Coca-Cola. The network's recent research, which in part prompted the upcoming changes, shows the early evening and evening audience is male and loves real people, situations, and stories, especially action-focused stories. Court TV has earned solid ratings lately with its primetime reality block, R.E.D., or Real, Exciting, Dramatic. Quoting Court TV General Manager Mark Juris, J-U-R-I-S, come on, General Manager, Court TV. Quote, we were in a unique situation where the programming outgrew the brand, and now we're creating a brand that reflects our already successful programming. You don't want your programming to outgrow your brand. That can hurt. More trades from Ad Age. Dateline Karachi, Pakistan. Increasing sales of Safeguard brand soap can be a daunting task in a nation like Pakistan, where vast numbers of children have a less than optimal understanding of the connection between health and personal hygiene. That's a nice, delicate set of phraseology. But Procter & Gamble and the local office of their ad agency turned that problem into an opportunity. They created Commander Safeguard, a now wildly popular superhero who has his own TV show, radio show, website, DVDs, and music videos. Doesn't say if he's selling any soap. Well, he's selling DVDs. You don't need to sell soap. From Practical Fish Keeping. Government officials have warned aquarium fish dealers in the UK they risk prosecution if fish they import turn out to be genetically modified. Practical Fish Keeping is revealing exclusively. The genetically modified inspectorate at the UK Central Science Laboratory sent a letter warning fish dealers that GM fish were not authorized in this country. This follows reports from Practical Fish Keeping concerning the production techniques used to develop red zebra danios, in which the magazine highlighted that the fish were either dyed or genetically modified. Red danio sales and imports. Office said it had become aware that red danios had been made available in the UK trade and was in the process of investigating whether the fish were in fact dyed or genetically modified. The government says, pending the results of the investigations, we're asking that fish importers do not import or trade any recently available colored fluorescent varieties of such fish. Red genetically modified danios are produced in Singapore and Malaysia and contain an extra red fluorescent protein. The fish are sold legally in many parts of the U.S. under the trademark name of Glowfish. And finally, it may be called Coca-Cola. This is from the Guardian newspaper in Britain. It may be called Coca-Cola, but though the drink uses the name of the coca leaf, its maker shies away from confirming whether the leaf is one of its ingredients. Now, Bolivian coca farmers want to reclaim the leaf as part of their country's cultural heritage by forcing Coca-Cola to change its brand name. This resolution has been adopted by an assembly that is rewriting Bolivia's constitution, potentially sending the government into a legal battle against Coca-Cola. The Andean nation has used the plant in religious ceremonies as a mild stimulant since before Christopher Columbus. But bury the lead, department. Go down in the story. You get to this. Coca-Cola denies ever having used cocaine in earlier versions of its drink, but will not say whether the natural leaf forms part of its secret recipe. Until a few years ago, the Guardian says, the Atlanta-based company bought tons of coca leaves annually. Huh? Reaction you might well have. When I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
There I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul. Snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you, turns me your slave. Come on, give me any little thing you want to, anything, baby, just let me get next to you. So am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you in the clear blue skies. How about you? Just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here, don't have no fear. Oh, is there a wonder why I'm really feeling in the mood for love? So tell me why.
This is Le Show from London. Just don't ask her to sing Beat It. Ladies and gentlemen, choked by red tape and stymied by an agency content to let the state rebuild alone in Desha County, Arkansas, Arkansans were betrayed by the federal government after recent tornadoes. That's according to the governor who testified to Congress this week. FEMA took 12 days before rejecting Governor Beebe's request for financial assistance. FEMA said the damage from the twisters was not significant enough to merit aid. For every day there was passed without federal response, there was a trust betrayed, the governor said. The governor's a Democrat. So, you can totally... No, you can't. But maybe, you know, who knows? He just went to Washington to see the cherry blossoms. Ladies and gentlemen, it was reported this week that Bill Clinton, at a meeting of donors, what other kind of meeting would you be having these days? At a meeting with donors, lashed out at the New York Times for its reluctance to publicize a statement by Senator Barack Obama from back in 2002, in which he, in the context of stating his opposition to the war in Iraq, the then pending war in Iraq, said, well, of course, but I don't have all the intelligence that's available to the people in the Senate, so if I were voting, I don't know what I would do. And Clinton said that the Times was derelict because they were hammering Hillary Clinton for refusing to apologize for or in any other way repudiate her vote in 2002 for the Iraq War resolution. Of course, that's been a subject of great contention in the Democratic presidential primary. But it was sort of interesting that Clinton was going off in the New York Times. Of course, in recent weeks, he went off on Fox News as Chris Elliott. I wish. Chris Wallace. Well, Chris Elliott worked for Fox, of course, and that TV show, but it wasn't Fox News. But it's all the same. But it's not. And meanwhile, of course, Hillary Clinton is being increasingly subject to questioning about her position on the Iraq War. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it all sounds to me like another episode of Clinton Something next here on Le Show.
Clinton Something, The Harlem Years.
So, Bill, kind of getting tough on the New York Times, aren't we?
Joe, babe, you know from your days as Anonymous, we kind of take it seriously when our friends stop acting like our friends. Hey, speaking of which, you heard about the real estate people coming by asking about this office?
Well, neighborhood has gotten hot since you moved in. I mean, it's still possible to remember a time when there wasn't a Starbucks in Harlem.
Hey, man, it's barely possible to remember a time when there wasn't a friggin' Whole Foods in Harlem.
That's true. Especially since what they charge for a pineapple could have been a month's rent up here a few years back.
No shoot. Hey, nice redesign of the magazine.
Yeah. Well, try anything twice. Mm. I'm blogging now, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm the only person in America who isn't. And that's just because my agent said it would drive down the price of my next book deal.
Well, that's what's driving my business crazy, trying to figure out whether giving this stuff away makes it less valuable or more.
Yeah.
But look, Bill, you attacking the New York Times doesn't seem the smartest strategy in the world at this point. I mean, you do want them on her side ultimately, don't you? I mean, She's not going to run against all three of her hometown papers, is she?
Hey, Mr. Klein, huh? You start asking questions. I'm going to start treating you like a reporter. Nobody wants that.
Well.
Now, listen here. Yeah. You were one of the folks helped label the Democrats the mommy party a while back. Well, I see my job right now as being the daddy of the mommy party. I need to take a poke at Fox News. I take a poke at Fox News. I need to throw an elbow at David Geffen. Done deal. Elbow thrown. I need to hurl a brushback pitch at the Times. That's what I do.
So you're attacking fair and balanced.
Damn straight. And there's one other thing. Way I figure it, the more time and energy I spend defending Hill, the less time and energy she has to spend defending me.
So it's an energy conservation policy.
You're good with the words. You should be a columnist.
So I'm assuming it's just a matter of time before you attack Time Magazine and me?
Just a matter of time.
Just stick with me through the rope line, James. We really do need to talk ASAP.
Okay, Hillary, but I'm not shaking any hands. My deal with Mary says we got to do public appearances together.
Fine, you've got my back. Hi, how are you? So exactly why am I not apologizing for my Iraq vote again? Nice to see you.
Because sorry is mommy word, and you're mommy enough just being a mommy.
Thanks for coming out today. But isn't it being daddy enough to tell the New York Times that I'd leave troops in Iraq until whenever? I mean, hi, how wonderful to see you. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, James, but that almost put me to the right of Bush.
Yeah, it almost did. And remember our two-leg strategy? That's where we want your right leg to be, left leg just to the right of Kucinich.
I know. So Obama gets caught in my leg pincers. Hi, how nice to see you again. Thank you again for the check. But last time I looked, I'm the only top-tier Democratic candidate not to renounce my vote on the war. Except for Obama, who didn't have to vote in the war because he wasn't born yet.
Look, everybody who needs to know you're sorry about the war vote already knows
how?
It.
Oh, I mean, hi. I'm sorry. I'm a good friend of the Native Americans. I really look forward to visiting you folks very soon. How?
People know how you feel about that vote because people know how you feel. That's the bond you have with folks ever since the whatever. And that's why we don't have to build that particular piece of the Hillary White House again. Look, if I thought you'd pick up one single primary vote by saying you were sorry for the war vote, we'd have you apologizing from here to Appaloosas and back. But it's as unnecessary as a dorsal fin on a gator.
Hello. Oh, my gosh. Are these your kids? Well, what if I said I regretted being misled? I've already said I was misled, so regretting that doesn't sound too mommy, does it? Bye-bye, girls. Thanks.
It's the administration that should regret misleading you. Mm. Once you regret being misled, you take them off the hook. It's like expressing regret for having been robbed. You know, it's weak. Weaker than gumbo in Gulfport.
They have gumbo in Gulfport?
Yeah, they say they do.
Hello, lovely to see you. James, what if I just said I was sorry I didn't have all the information the administration had when it gave me the information that they didn't have? Mm. You know, something like that, so it turns it right around in the same breath, so that the last thing you hear isn't the apology, it's the attack. That's pretty daddy, isn't it? Thanks for coming.
Look, just take a gander. What's happening with Katie Couric, you know? She's still worse than the anchors on the other networks.
Well,
no, really, she ain't. But, you know, she gets her hair curled, and she wears stockings, and she's getting blamed for everything bad except global warming and tainted spinach. That's what we're trying to protect you from. You know, you don't want to be the Katie Couric of presidential politics.
Hi, how are you? No, I don't. But don't I want to be the kind of person who has the strength of character to admit and apologize for my most serious mistakes, assuming it can help me with my base?
I don't know. You want us to run a focus group on that?
Would you?
Sure. Media's running anyway.
Cool. Nice to see you.
Youthful angst and middle-aged return to power. Together, they add up to Clinton something. The Harlem Years.
Just before our love got lost, you said I'm as constant as a northern star. I said, constantly in the darkness. Where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar. On the back of a cartoon coaster, in the blue TV screen light, I drew a map of Canada. Your face sketched on it twice. You're in my blood like holy wine. It tastes so bitter and so sweet. I could drink a case of you, little darling. I'd still be on my feet. I'd still be on my feet. I'm a lonely painter. I live in a box of paints. I'm frightened by the devil. I'm drawn to those that ain't afraid. I remember that time you told me. You said, love is touching souls. Well, surely you touched mine. 'Cause part of you pours out of me in these lines from time to time. You're in my blood like holy wine. You taste so bitter and so sweet. I could drink a case of you, little darling. I'd still be on my feet. I would still be on my feet. Hey. I met a woman with a mouth like yours. She knew your life, she knew your devils and your deeds, and she said, go to him, stay with him if you can, but be prepared to bleed. But you're in my blood, you're my holy wine. You taste so bitter and so sweet. I could drink a case of you, darling. I'd still be on my feet. I would still be on my feet. You're in my blood like holy wine, and you taste so bitter and so sweet. I could drink a case of you, little darling. I'd still be on my feet. I'd still be on my feet.
Ladies and gentlemen, you probably find yourself asking, whatever happened to the place where all the high-level nuclear waste is going to be stored so we can get back to having safe, plentiful nuclear power? Dateline Washington, will cost $27 billion to build and operate the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump just through the year 2023. This is from the Energy Department in a new cost calculation or financial pitch. The department did not release a new figure for the total life cycle cost of the project, estimated several years ago. Just $58 billion to store the waste from cheap, safe nuclear energy. The department plans to recalculate that figure in May. It will almost certainly rise, says Edward F. Ward Sproat, director of the Energy Department's Office of Civilian Radioactive Waste Management. This $27 billion figure assumes the department meets its goal of opening Yucca Mountain in March 2017. That's a best-case scenario. So it's always good to assume best-case scenarios. That's the way you win a war. Sproat cautioned it will slip if the department does not get the money it needs each year for the dump. In recent years, the department's budget goals have not been met, partly because of opposition from state politicians in Nevada. We don't want the dump. One reason why, maybe, the director of the Yucca Mountain Project says he's making the controversial quality assurance culture of the place a priority. But the historical ignoring or tamping down of problems has deep roots, according to a former auditor, and the results are still being felt. So let's get the dump. And Deadline Piketon, Ohio, a small bar of radium is missing from a former uranium enrichment plant in southern Ohio, the U.S. Department of Energy reported this week. The radioactive ingot, about the size of a medical gel capsule and stored in a glass vial, is not a health or security threat. So, it would be if the Iranians did it. Maybe. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. Not a security threat, i.e. not enough to kill a Russian.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Climate change could have an impact on animal evolution and ecology, scientists believe. A 20-year study of Scottish sheep. You don't want to ask how they studied them. You don't want to ask that up there. How'd you study the sheep? Very carefully. Found weather patterns were driving changes in body shape and population size. Harsh winters led to larger sheep, which brought about changes in population size, yet in milder winters, this effect was not seen. This team says the study, published in the journal Science, is the first to connect these different factors. Until now, it has proven really quite difficult to show how ecology and evolutionary change are linked, but we've developed a way to tie them together, says an author of the paper. They examined a population of sheep on the island of Herta in the Outer Hebrides. The reason we looked at these sheep is they've been studied in enormous detail, he says. So apparently, as the weather gets warmer, more smaller sheep, if you see what I'm saying. And if man is inadvertent, now, this is just from the, if for those of you who think that people ever learn a lesson about anything, anywhere, at any time, you might want to think about this. If man is inadvertently capable of heating the entire planet, surely it's not beyond his wit to cool it down as well, asks the Financial Express. Although most climate scientists do not like to talk about it, cutting greenhouse gas emissions is not, strictly speaking, the only way to solve the problem of climate change. Just as technology caused the problem, it might also be able to help reverse it. It's all very logical, isn't it? The use of planetary scale engineering, ladies and gentlemen, to counteract climate change is known as geoengineering. The idea has been around for years. When a report on climate change was submitted to President Lyndon Johnson in 1965, the authors did not even bother to consider the idea of reducing carbon dioxide emissions. Instead, the report suggested spreading very small reflecting particles across the ocean surface to reflect light and heat back into space. The idea of deliberately cooling the Earth has never gone away since. Global emissions are still rising and seem likely to do so for years to come, so some scientists believe it might be worth thinking about a second line of defense, if only as an insurance policy. The idea has gained new currency in recent months. Climate Change, a scientific journal, published a series of papers on geoengineering last August, including one by a Nobel Prize-winning atmospheric chemist. In November, the Carnegie Institution and America's Space Agency held a conference on the topic, and American officials have lobbied for geoengineering research to be included among the recommendations of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Of all the schemes proposed, the most ambitious and expensive idea would be to place a giant sunshade in space at the inner Lagrange point, a position on the line between the Earth and the Sun, where the combination of centripetal and gravitational forces allows an object to maintain a constant position between the two. Didn't see Montgomery Burns try this? Somehow, I seem to remember that. If the object is big enough, it could block out enough of the sun's rays to cool the Earth. Roger Angel, not the tiresome baseball writer, but an astronomer at the University of Arizona. No, I don't mean he's tiresome. Tiresome was describing baseball. Has suggested assembling a cloud of millions of small reflecting spacecraft less than a meter across at this point, where together they would block out almost 2% of the sun's rays. Ladies and gentlemen, think of it. So, as I say, just in case you think that humans are capable of learning any lesson about anything at any time, just say the words to yourself quietly, giant sunshade. News of the Worm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And finally this week, the United States plans to provide $750 million over the next 5 years for Pakistan to develop its border areas. It's about time. Those are the areas, of course, where the Taliban is resurging. Says the State Department spokesman who announced the development plan, "We have a fundamental interest in the success of Pakistan as a moderate, stable, democratic Muslim nation." That's 0 for 3. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, or streaming on public radio stations around the country. You can find out when and where at publicradiofan.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. On the air on the big 104 in Berlin and on both Sirius and XM satellite radios. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like all the Irish people being out of Leicester Square by the time I go downstairs. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much, huh? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Adrian Bodnam here at Capital Radio for all their help. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. We don't have any more information about the squirrels this week, so we can just assume that they're still doing okay. But Santa Monica, otherwise? Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you must know by now, it's a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.